You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
Well, I had quite the experience today. Very interesting experience.
Let's hear it.
Well, it actually isn't that interesting, but it's more... I'm standing there thinking to myself, this is why I should stop procrastinating. Just for the record, Mike Johnson's in here. Noodles, he's in Philly or he's going to Philly. I don't know if Noodles is ever going to be on the show again. He has, it feels like he's been gone for a month and a half. But at some point, he'll return. But Johnny's in here. So, crazy snowfall last night, right?
Mm. Was it really that crazy, or was it just the first one?
I didn't think it was that. Like,
I mean, it was a significant 10 centimeters.
I only didn't think it was crazy because I got out of the house when a little later and things were already cleaned up. But apparently, it was significant. 500 crashes reported.
Well, I think the first one always sticks out clearly, but it was like a double shovel for me. I shoveled yesterday, then I got out there and shoveled this morning, and I was out there for a while. Like, I usually base the snowfall on how long I'm out there, and if I have to help people, I know that. I'm going to get one.
No, I got one thing better. Pay a guy $200 and he'll do it the whole year.
Well, that's what I'm going to look into on the Jiffy app, because the Jiffy app supplies that type of service.
I was thinking about that. There you go. There's your read.
I know that. That's exactly what I'm going to be doing around 4:45, is telling you about my plan for the next big snowfall.
And I'll do it, too.
There you go. So anyway, I got my snow tires on today.
Yeah.
So I'm putting them on outside. I'm helping my father-in-law, who really did all the work.
Did you say you put them on?
Put them
You're
on
putting
today.
Them on?
Put them on today.
You put on your own tires?
Well, I contributed.
What are you, got a jack or
you
something?
You like a jacket up
I
in
got
the driveway
the jack.
In the snow?
Oh, yeah. I got the compressor.
You have a compressor gun?
Oh, I am, dude.
What?
I got everything. I don't know how to use any of it. I had nothing to do with anything. I just sat there and like...
Jim, the tool man, hey.
That's right.
That
but
Jesus.
I'm thinking to myself,
this.
How many people put on their snow tires after the snow has already fallen?
Tons.
Lots.
Really?
We are run on phone calls this morning to the tire shop.
You think so?
There's been a couple years where it's gotten so far where I was like, piss on it. I think the snow might be over.
It's February. Like,
yeah.
Oh, probably seen the worst of it.
Once you're through January, if you don't have them on, just...
So if you want to grind it out, I mean, you're taking a big risk, but you get to a point where you're like, they ain't coming.
It's mandatory, I think, in Quebec, isn't it? I believe it's a law that you have to have snow tires.
I think you are correct.
I want to say that that's
I live
the
there,
truth.
I should know. I think I have a vague recollection that's true. And you need them. I mean, it just snows more there, but...
Yeah, and that's not the case here, and I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Like, I don't think Doug Ford's priority is to... implement that type of law where people have to put them on, but I'm
so
all
you
decked
put
out
your,
man.
Like, what kind of gear are you wearing in the driveway -3 changing tires?
Yeah, like, are you in a cold trickle outfit?
I'm picturing the jumpsuit, the fire retardant jumpsuit.
No, I'm not, man. I'm totally out of place. I got like the Roots, the 2019 Roots pants on. I've got like
Uggs
on, exactly, like earmuffs. I'm wearing earmuffs out there.
Leather gloves.
I've got Canada Goose gloves on. Like, I couldn't be further away from an actual mechanic. But I'll tell you what, man, it's a good feeling. Until one of those wheels comes flying off, and then it's a totally different story, which apparently has been a big issue in southern Ontario.
People's wheels coming off?
Well, because, they don't torque the wheels enough.
Because they don't have the compression gun turned up high enough like you do at your house.
That's right. Well, I had it jacked up today. So I'm feeling very good. You know, I've told you this before. I don't really know what I'm doing, but it's a very masculine feeling when you get anything done around the house.
A real sense of satisfaction. I mean, I wouldn't really know because I don't do anything, but... It's a real sense of satisfaction.
Yeah.
The smallest of jobs.
I feel very satisfied.
Like, yeah.
Have you ever, like, just driven by a guy who just freshly cut his own grass, and he has a cold beer, and he's staring at it, and he's like, in his head, he thinks that's the greatest lawn cutting job of all time.
Yeah.
It's basically
everyone's
Wrigley
done it.
Field.
You look back, you're like, that's Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it's Field of Dreams. Yeah. Grass guy is so committed.
Yeah.
And it's totally unnecessary. Like, really, he's not doing anything different than anybody else is doing.
I personally think that a guy with a big yard that has a riding lawnmower puts 12 in a little bag on ice, and it's his Sunday getaway, and he says, don't bother me, and I'll do a great job, and leave me alone.
I kind of wish I had that type of, like, the tractor at your house. Like, you got to have like acres to really pull that out, or close to it. But I, my brother-in-law lives on a place, like a massive piece of land. He said it takes him about 2 hours to mow the lawn.
Oh, yeah.
And he has no problem getting on that. He's on the lawnmower. He's on a tractor just cruising around.
Rolling through, listening to the tunes?
Absolutely. He's got music on and probably on his phone half the time. He's having a great time. Anyway.
So you got in here nicely then.
Yeah, so I'm all good.
Tires, good
I'm
to
all
go.
Good. Yeah, I'm ready for 3 hours of nonstop action.
Still a little grease under your nails. I'm impressed.
I feel
good
very
to see.
Good. Yeah. I cleaned up. I mean, I'm here. We're on TV and everything. So I'm half sports guy, half mechanic.
I will say in my life that will never happen. I will never change tires over.
Well, you really got to trust what you're doing, right? Like, it's.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're
the
putting.
The jack alone seems very. Like, I think I could probably handle screwing the bolts on and off.
Johnny, it's because of what we did. We were professional hockey
jacking
players.
Jacking it seems a little much to me.
And our classic move was. Get somebody to do it. And it's everybody's move. Hey, you got a guy to fix my car. You got a guy to cut my grass. You got a guy to.
You got a winter tire guy? Yeah, comes to your house. Yeah. Perfect.
Gotta have him. Gotta have him.
I still got that guy.
In Toronto?
Yeah. They come to your house and do it. It's great.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't heard of that service. I don't know if you get that on the Jiffy app. Maybe you could. I
mean, you know you could.
I think you probably could. So.
Yeah, they're good. Yeah.
Anyway, good to have you in here, Johnny, and oh, we missed out on you on Friday as well. That was a weird experience, man. The Leaf game on a Friday afternoon.
He was all turned around, though, because the Leaf game was on.
Just wasn't
we
on our station.
It wasn't on our network, so he was trying to act like it wasn't going on, and we didn't talk about what was happening.
It was the weirdest experience.
Meanwhile,
you're coming in between
intermissions. It's probably on the TV, and you're losing your mind.
Yeah, of course we were. It was on TV the whole time. Like, I've been down this road before with Jay's games. When Jay's, like, for those, anyone that listens to this show enough, they know what's happening. People aren't stupid. They know that the game's on, and it's like, well, I'm not going to tip them off as to why it's not on our station, so I'm just going to keep talking about it as if it doesn't even exist.
But then you finally said, you know what? Enough of it with about 2 minutes left.
That's the best thing. We did
a post-game
show. He
went into full summary mode about the game while it was still on. I loved it.
We didn't talk about it for 2.5 hours and then did a post-game show at 6:30 out of nowhere. If you were listening to us the whole time without any awareness that the game was on, you'd be like, wait a minute, they just lost 6-4? Like, what the hell's going on in Buffalo right
now? Well, there was, like, I mean, it was the back-to-back situation, and I think somebody came out today and said they have belief in Michael Hutchison. He's given up 5 goals in every game he plays. And the only way I could describe it on the panel was there's so many no-chancers. I know the guys can shoot the puck in the NHL, but you saw Freddie Anderson the next night. There were some opportunities you probably shouldn't make the save, but he does. It's amazing how much video you don't have to watch when you have a good goalie, because it's like, you know what, that was covered up. Okay, we'll sweep that under the carpet. Yeah. But that's what Freddie Anderson does. He made 3 or 4 saves. I was at the game Saturday where you're like, that's an incredible save. But
that's what good goalies do.
I know. But with Hutchison, you're watching, and it's like...
And it's the other way.
There's so many no-doubters where Olofsson just gets it, and he's like shifting, and he's sliding, and it's under the bar, and there's no chance. No chancers. You can't have 3 or 4 of those a game. You got to make a save. Jack Eichel came down the wing. Great shot. But you know what? Sometimes you got to stop Jack
Eichel.
Five-hole,
sometimes you got to stop him.
Skinner from the top of the hash, from the top of the circle.
And he can shoot the puck too, Johnny, but he's not Brett Hull.
And
like, you got to make a save once in a while on a shot like that.
Every shot that hits a crossbar and goes in, it's not a perfect shot. It's not an unstoppable shot. Every shot that hits the post and goes in is not an unstoppable shot. You're right. The Olofsson one, he's sliding to his left. It's beating him short side over his shoulder. Like, if you're on the bench, you can't say that's a terrible goal, but you're absolutely saying, I think we'd kind of like a save there.
Yeah, it didn't,
and
it didn't sneak in from the red line. I mean, they didn't flip it in, it went in. You know, these are legitimate shots, but you're right. At some point, you got to make a stop. And well, Freddie Anderson did that on Saturday night. And you look at Anderson's numbers. When he plays, they are clearly in a playoff spot. Like, when Freddie Anderson plays, you extrapolate that over 82, they're on like 105, 110-point pace. That's how good they are with him. And they're 0-6-1 with the backup in. It's well-documented. Kyle Dubas was the one you're referencing. He was speaking about the new the announcement of a new Marley coach today, and naturally the media is like, okay, that's cool. Step aside, can we talk about the real team here and talk about the Maple Leafs? And he was asked about Hutchison, and here's what he had to say about that earlier today.
What I would really like, I think, more than anything, is for us to put together a good game in front of Michael here in the coming stretch, and continue to give him opportunity as well. I thought he was outstanding in the first period against Buffalo, and I think we got a little bit sloppy thereafter. So I know it's the pressing question. There always has to be a pressing concern in this market. That's what we all sign up for. But I think what we're really looking forward to, and what we're stressed here today to the players, is we'd like for them to put a complete effort in front of Fred and Michael both.
Well, so, you score four on the road. Didn't they score four in Buff?
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be a W in the National Hockey League. I don't care if he had a good first period or not. It's not National First Period League.
Well, and at some point, the truth about the position and the unfairness about the position is sometimes you just simply have to steal a game. Like Carey Price in the third last night, he had to be perfect.
Right.
And he's taken heat in Montreal because he wasn't. Now, Pasternak, that was a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
He technically could have stopped that. Backes in the slot could have stopped it. DeBrusque in the slot could have stopped it.
Yeah, but Gallagher could have changed the game, too. He had a breakaway.
Right.
And if he scores that, it's a totally different hockey game.
Of course.
And that didn't happen.
The point I'm making is you're up 1-0 in the third. You have the capability of being perfect. That's not what you're asking out of your backup. You're not asking for perfection. But Kyle Dubas, I will say this, he has always been a guy, I think, at times he takes on too much blame. Like, he falls on the sword
right.
all the time.
I got to be better. I should have done it differently.
That's on me, to the point where it's almost like, all right, Kyle, we know that you're compensating for other issues and sticking up for your people. So I'm never going to take a run at him for not being an upfront guy or someone that realizes that, okay, I have to take responsibility here. But claiming that this is just an issue within the market, let's get serious. This better be a burning concern behind closed doors. Your backup is an American Hockey League player, and you're 0-6-1 when they play.
It's
that easy. Like, if that's not a burning concern, I don't know what is.
And they miss the playoffs, you'll look back and say, well, if you look at the back-to-backs and the backup goaltender going in, there's the playoffs.
It's his job to build the team.
I don't know if I'm expecting him to say anything different. Like, we went and told the team, we expect them to play better in front of Michael. Okay, so we're not making a change right now. I'm buying myself more time. But the kind of with a wry grin, well, there's always got to be something in this market. No, there doesn't.
No.
If the backup goalies are 4-2, there's no conversation about this. No, maybe there's something else, but it's not about this. You can't act like this is nothing.
Yeah, you can't claim, like, listen.
It's something.
This market... There are a handful of markets in the league. Well, there's at least seven because there's seven Canadian teams.
Right.
But there's always going to be a talking point, and there's always going to be...
But this is not manufactured.
This is not manufactured.
This is legit.
This is factual.
They haven't got a win from their backup.
Exactly.
That's an issue.
Yep.
And if you're in charge of deciding who the backups are on the team, that's your issue.
Absolutely.
So while it's okay to say what he did, and like, I can never question how he presents things to the media because he's great. He's very affable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's retrospective analysis, but if you look back on it, McElhaney came here on life support,
mm-hmm.
and he played very well, and he probably would have taken some kind of extension at
less
than $1 million.
For sure. They made the first, I guess, misstep was that they thought Garrett Sparks could build off what he did in the minors, winning the Calder Cup.
I know, but Johnny, Garrett Sparks is not going to have the ability to be your number one at some point,
right.
What the hell's the sense of putting any time and effort into that?
I think they thought they had a 6-year backup. He could be a backup the whole time behind Freddie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was wrong, but that was their thought. You had the best numbers, great numbers in the minors. McElhaney was 33 at the time. Coming off a couple good years, but not really a great NHL goalie prior to. I get the decision. I understand the rationale behind it. It was wrong, no doubt. But that's when the backup carousel started.
Oh, yeah. Now
because they made that call, and it was a wrong one.
Yeah, and they're chasing now to the point where Freddie Anderson is being posed the question, like, would you be okay with starting upwards
of
65
games?
And what else is he going to say? He has to say yes, but you know he's not comfortable with that because we're dealing with a legacy moment for him.
Yeah, but why not? Can you buy us some time? Can you play this back-to-back and maybe buy some time? I don't know.
Well, it depends on what your priority is and what you believe the expectation is for this team. I didn't expect this. Now, sometimes it changes. The goalposts can't change. I didn't expect us to be thinking, we got to win in December. I thought it would be, we got to win in April. And if it's, we got to win in April, we got to make sure Freddie Anderson is fresh in April. Because the fact of the matter is, the past couple Aprils, faded.
It's pretty much gotten to, we got to win in December.
Well, that's what it feels like. I understand that.
Well, you do run the numbers real quick. If it's 98 to make it last year, Say it's 96, because there's some teams in the bottom are struggling a little bit. They have 30 points in 28 games. They have 54 games left. They need 66 points. Right? 33 and 21 the rest of the way. That's a strong run. So I think the goalposts have moved. And I think it's fair to say that they have because of injuries or poor performance or whatever. I think the assumption was this is a Stanley Cup team. Mm-hmm. They're talented enough to contend for a cup. The reality of where they sit in the standings right now is they got to push to make the playoffs. There's no, we're not worrying about games in December because we're worried about games in April. No, I think it's moved where you have to worry about December.
That's right.
So you have the chance to play in April. And maybe he's too tired and he's crappy in April. That's the dice you're going to have to roll to get there because I don't think they can just say, we're going to go with our normal rotation
and if you
as
have to
we
go
planned.
That record, Johnny, and they have to go 33 and 21. You can't have a situation where the backup goalie now is so much more important than it was when we played. You can't have a guy go in there and it's 5-0 every game, or you're losing 5-4 or 5-2 or 5-3.
No, and listen, the cap situation has put them in this spot, yeah. But they're the ones that signed the contract. And what is I find interesting about this whole situation is Kyle Dubas in this front office and this team now, clearly very progressive, cutting edge, trying to stay ahead of the trends as opposed to even being within the trends, but they're behind this trend. Like, we are in the era of tandem goaltenders. We're in the era where you don't even have to start 50 games to be up for a Vezina.
No.
So for the idea of them going backwards on that and saying we might need 65 starts out of a starter, it goes against everything that you would believe Kyle Dubas and the stats and sports science would indicate.
That. He knows that.
He knows it, but he's a prisoner to it because of the cap space.
If he was being honest, he would say, this is not what we want to do. He knows the numbers. He knows the science. He also knows the reality of the standings that you're right. He's a prisoner of his own roster, which he made, especially the backup goalie, because he's been largely responsible in trying to solve that puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know he's the backup goalie, but if he's going to play 25 games, 22 games, you need more than
getting rinsed
8 points.
Every time.
Like, you need 18 out of 20, 18 points out of 22. Still not great, but it's close to 500. And they're just not getting it done right now.
No.
And the question is, well, at what point do the players stop believing the backup goalie can get it done? Like, they're thinking, oh, here goes another one.
Do you
here
still think they one. Have faith?
I
can't imagine they do. I don't care about these
are you
meetings.
At all?
Oh, man, they're not stupid.
The vote of confidence?
Every game is 5 goals going in. Do you think they're like... And they're always like defending him, backing him up, which you should do as a
publicly,
teammate.
Publicly, you have to.
Yeah, it's like, you know what, we got to play better, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, wrong. They know what the hell's going on. And it's a younger group, so they might be thinking, God, I can't be creative and make a play here, because if I do... And it's a turnover. It's back of our net, back of our net, back of our net. And you can't play like that.
Especially now when they're trying to figure out a system. Like, I mean, it was all fun and games. They looked like the Harlem Globetrotters against Detroit. But there is some adjustments. And I think you see some mistakes that they make in their own end. Those little pop passes to the middle. A lot of guys swinging through the zone. If they don't get it, they're way ahead of the puck. And pucks are getting turned over. Like the VC goal. I mean, it's a terrible play by Matthews. But the point is he's trying to pass it to Johnsson there, who's flying through the middle of the ice. There will be mistakes, I think, in the next few weeks while they try to figure out what Sheldon Keefe is asking them to do. Margin of error is that much smaller when you got a guy you don't believe will make the saves.
Mitch Marner, it sounds like he's ready to return. Won't be tomorrow night in Philly. Maybe Wednesday night
against Colorado. I thought he had to
Colorado.
Wait until...
I think Wednesday
was the
28th
earliest.
Day, I believe.
Yes.
So I believe he can return. I doubt he will. I'm thinking he starts on the weekend at St. Louis. Like, the Leafs have a trip coming up at St. Louis... And then they head out west.
Mm.
And
at Calgary, at Van, at Edmonton?
I believe so. Like, the stretch has
not
been...
the cupcake it was a couple years ago.
No. I mean, Edmonton, they just split over the weekend. Vancouver's...
Plays you tough.
Calgary is still a good team. They're trying to figure themselves out right now. They've gone through some problems, clearly. I mean, just that's an understatement. But St. Louis might be the best team in the league or close to it. So you got at St. Louis, at Vancouver, at Calgary, at Edmonton coming up.
Did you guys hear Bertuzzo's comment?
No.
He's coming back from the suspension. And he goes, you know, of course, you know, I just play with edge and I'm going to have to. You know, I never want to injure anyone. I'm like, the hell was the cross-check in the back? Like, what were you trying to do to him when he was lying on the ground if you weren't trying to injure him?
I didn't think that was a suspension.
You don't think he was trying to hurt him?
No, I thought it was...
What else could he have been going through his mind?
Like, I don't know. I thought it was double minor cross-checking.
But what, so the guy's lying there. The play's gone. He's just lying there.
Dude, and I always go back to Bufflin on JT Miller, where Bufflin could have chopped JT Miller's head directly off of his body, and I think he got two games. So when I see that, it's just stuck in my head every time. So when I see Bortuzzo, it's like, okay, cross-check, give another cross-check.
Are you telling me this is not intent to injure? So he knocks him in the net, okay? You're not happy you're getting a penalty. What are you thinking here? I want him out of the crease?
No. Like, honestly, that's just... Everyone's got a different view of it. To me, that's 4 minutes.
I just love to cut. I wasn't trying to hurt him. Well, I think by definition, you're kind of trying to hurt him on that play.
I mean, it's like in a fight, after a fight. I wish he didn't get hurt.
That's different than
bombs.
I wasn't trying to hurt him.
Yeah, well, you're right. But that's that comment has been made after fights, too, I'm sure.
Yes.
I wasn't trying to hurt him, even though I was speedbagging
him. I hate to see him knocked out like that.
Yeah,
really?
It's tough.
He didn't seem that way when you were swinging from the fences?
Him, and I kept punching when he hit the ground. But
not that I expected anything else, but I'm like,
Yeah.
That looked a lot like you were trying to separate his spleen from his...
But, in fairness, but of course he's going to play on an edge. That's why he's in the league. Yeah. He's not in the league to score points.
No.
And you think Craig Berube's? I think Berube's more than happy to eat four games without him.
Of course he is.
So he comes back and
but if you're
players are
him out of the lineup anyway.
Yeah, but players are going to be scared of the guy.
No one's going to be scared of Robert Bortuzzo.
Yes, they will.
No
be.
Way.
Yes, they will.
You don't think
be.
That Victor Arvidsson goes stands in the crease the exact same way next game?
No, I'm not convinced he will.
Care to wager?
Sure.
Care to wager?
How are we going to determine
we'll
that?
We'll watch how close he goes in front of the net.
Okay.
I think he won't run over the goalie. You know, so Patrick Hornquist won't go back there and follow
you don't
the goalie.
Think any loose cannon in this league still has an effect the way...
Almost none.
You don't think Tom Wilson's a guy where people are like, this is... I'd prefer not
to... Because he hits you with... Like, not with
wouldn't you
fist.
Rather be hit with a shoulder than hit with a cross check to the back? I would. I'd take it face on.
I would rather get hit with the crossbow.
It's a double-edged sword. Everyone's aware of Bortuzzo, and they might think twice about going in the corner. But there's also the mentality of, well, if I go in the corner, he's not going to be dumb enough to do it again. So that's the balance.
I think Wilson can get you in the run of play and get you good
because
he can skate and hit that well. Bortuzzo, I mean, it's rare that someone gets hurt in a cross. Like, you want to cross-check me? Like, it's going to hurt, but you're not going to hurt me. And, like, the guys that would otherwise... Do you keep going in there? They're not going to be bothered by anything. Like those kind of players, it's not going to change the way he plays.
We'll see about that.
Okay. I will.
All right.
Someone booked the next time. Oh, they already played. They just played the game after. Remember, he missed it.
But they're in the division.
And Arvidsson's out for 6 weeks.
They have to play each other at least
okay,
one,
well, when
one
they play against,
times.
Just watch how many Nashville players go around the front of the net.
Okay, the Bortuzzo tracker.
See if Bortuzzo just has...
Oh,
the Bermuda triangle around the crease.
I think he's created
no
5 feet
gets near
of space.
Him. He'll be like Bobby Orr out there skating around. No one can
5 feet of space.
Yeah.
The loose cannon space.
Yeah.
Loose cannon
loose
real
cannon
estate.
Bubble wrap.
Sounds like Mitch Marner's coming back relatively soon at some point this week. Sounds like Kyle Lowry returning as well. The Raptors have a massive week coming up, and they laid a beating on Utah. We'll come back and try to figure out what the Jazz were up to on Saturday night.
Oh, my God.
They
know exactly what they
somebody. Somebody had to be out in the city and saw some people around.
They flew in Saturday afternoon and
got
6 p.m. tip-off. Yeah. When you're coming from Salt Lake City and you fly into Toronto with a green light, I got to believe.
And the basketball players, from my own experience, hockey players don't. We'll go out to dinner, have a glass of wine, have a couple beers, whatever. But like, they don't really go out the night before games. That's not the same experience for basketball players. They get after it night before games.
Yeah, there's some stories out there.
Yeah, we'll tell one when we get back.
We'll see what's up in that area. Mike Johnson in here, Jeff O'Neill, I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, this week we have a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs taking on Carolina December 23rd. That's the afternoon game, 2 p.m. game. The next generation game, as they call it. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you will have the chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue. At one point in his hockey career, this former Maple Leaf played on the same team as Mike Johnson.
Come on, dude.
What was the clue?
At one point in his hockey career, this former Maple Leaf was on the same team as Mike Johnson.
Just say he had a hockey stick, too. He used a hockey stick.
Does that mean in the NHL or pre-NHL?
Could be anywhere.
Because if it's in the NHL, there's a ton of guys that could be that.
Hockey career. Could be, did you ever play in Europe during a lockout or anything?
Yeah.
So it could be over there. You never know.
Oh, whoa. Then I yay now.
Did I just sewer that? I don't know. I might
have. I have a hunch.
Okay. And I have no idea, just for the record. I don't know.
Like taking candy from a baby.
There you go. But that's a big game, man. That's a 2 o'clock game. That's another afternoon game. Right around Christmas.
I hated afternoon games.
Hated playing in them.
Yeah. I love working at them. Actually, I like 4 o'clock games as a broadcaster. Because then there's no morning skate. Still got a kind of relaxing day to do what you want.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Game's over by 7. You got the free evening to do what you please.
Right. Yeah, that's not bad. But anyway, a couple of things to get to here with the Raptors. For starters, Nick Nurse announced as the coach of the month in the Eastern Conference. And you were talking about this in the previous segment when, you know, people pay lip service to stuff when you're losing. When you win, it all disappears. I think the word that probably sticks out more than any other word that never gets brought up in one scenario but always gets brought up in the other is culture. Mm-hmm. And Nurse was saying that today. He's like, I don't really know about this culture stuff. Like, we play hard, we want to work hard and have a good time. It's so easy to say that when you win a championship, you're 15-4. You don't think about these intangibles. Mm. Like, intangibles don't factor in because you've mastered them. They're a part of your program already.
In this day and age, it's almost like that's all you can ask for. Everyone's like kind of into themselves. They've got their own Instagram page. They've got walking in with outfits they want everyone to see. All you can hope is that when they put their gear on, that they work hard, and there's your culture. It's not like they're going to be in the locker room like demanding other guys work out like it was 1998. It's like when the game starts, play hard and go home and do whatever you want, and there's your culture.
Right.
That's all you can really ask for.
But if you win, then you don't have to go searching for anything else. Like, even guys that lose, teams that lose, a lot of them still work hard.
Your culture comes into question because it's like, what are you doing?
But it's not like they're not working hard when you suck. You just play on a less talented team.
It's not any good.
Montreal's not mailing it in right now. Like, they're not just saying, we don't want to win. We don't care. They're just not good enough to get the job
done. But they've got a culture issue now.
Now, is DeMar DeRozan, all-time great Raptor, is he not capable of playing defense, or did he not want to play defense? Because I think a lot of that is about defense. So is that a talent thing with him? Because I've gone down to San Antonio, his efficiency ratings are not good this year. He was very good at offense. Was it a work ethic thing? Was it a culture thing? Or is it that he's not incapable? I'm like, if you're a good athlete, good enough to play offense, you think you'd be good enough to move and to buy into a defensive scheme? Is that a work thing?
I have to believe
like him specifically?
Yeah, I have to believe.
I have to believe so too.
A lot of it was I'm just not going to fully commit.
Right. I'm going to save my energy for my buckets.
Right, exactly. Right. Like that's actually going to push. That's a big problem. And that's one, I guess that
and
is
I guess
the
that's
culture.
Culture.
I guess that is the culture.
Right.
Because the one thing you can say about the Raptors is defensively, you know they're going to commit to that.
Did you see how the first half they were amazing against the Jazz? What was it? They were up by 40 at the end of the first. 40?
Yeah.
This is crazy.
I have not seen a half like that in a long time.
The Jazz even
score
40. Oh, it was
the biggest lead in, like,
franchise history, for sure.
And Utah is, like, a spectacular team. Like,
and
very good team.
They just did not play defense in the third quarter.
Oh, the Raps said we're done.
I heard you guys talking about whether or not Hayes could get a basket. In the third quarter, you might have been able to get a basket for the Jazz.
If I played for Utah,
yes.
I could have.
And then when it got close, you saw that commitment ratchet right back up. It's like, okay, you know what? It got to 16 or 15. Okay.
Well, it's almost like the starters were like, oh, now we're going to have to actually play in the fourth.
Right. They were thinking of the whole half off.
Yeah. They're like, can we? Okay, let's go out there and commit for another like 7 or 8 minutes,
right,
and then we're out. And they all got pulled out with like 7 or 8 minutes left.
Yeah, it was good. They got it back to 23 and said, okay,
we're done. Now it's enough. And even Utah was like, forget it. We're just going to mail this one in. Like, we're not catching up here.
But for Nick Nurse, I think that's where the culture. Like, that word, I read the quote. He's like, I don't know what that means. I don't talk about that. But I think the base level of commitment and effort to defense in basketball.
That's their culture. They do what he says. And if you don't, you don't play. There's a culture.
But, but I guess that's not the norm. I think in hockey, generally speaking, guys almost across the board, they're going to try to do what they're told. And they're going to try to do it as well as they can. Like, very rarely do you look at a guy and be like, no, you don't think so? I think
in every single area?
I said,
like defense, you think every forward in the league is like committed to defense?
Ray has talked about it a lot. Not everyone can be a 200-foot player.
Maybe because
and
not
some
aware,
guys aren't expected to
not
be.
Good
Phil
at
Kessel,
it.
He's expected to go out and play within the team structure to some degree. We know he's not going to back check. You know he's not going
to
hit.
Because he chooses not to do it.
Yeah, see, I
that's correct, but they're willing to take it.
I watch and I'm like, I find it few and far between where I'm like, I can isolate it. I'm like, that guy's just not trying.
Well, because that's the nature of the sport.
Right.
Like if you're gliding, then it sticks out. If you're skating anyone can look like they're busy, working their ass off.
But in basketball, in hockey, clearly,
you have to move.
You have to move, and there's guys who don't want to try that hard on defense.
Right. It's not like fighting through a screen is the best example of some guy who's like, I'm not going to do it tonight.
I'm going to get picked off on this
one. Yeah, I'm not. You got me.
A rotational help to a three line. You're like, I'm not going to get all the way out there.
Right. Right. Exactly.
But I find, I mean,
taking a charge. Now, that isn't an effort. That's courage in many ways.
Yeah.
But
I mean, for a winger playing defense in the NHL, if he, you know, he gets in his own end, you know, he's going to take a look around. He's going to stand around in front of his guys.
If his head's on a swivel, he's
going to do what
he's
doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Is he? Is he actually doing what he's supposed to be doing?
I think for the most part, they
are. Or is it that the ask is so limited
that
anybody can achieve it?
That's probably part of it, too. Yeah, because you can get by in the NHL with being not a great defensive winger.
Right. The ask isn't that
significant. It's not hard. You just kind of get back there and get in the way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, now the game has changed enough where the neutral zone factors in the way that it did for the longest time. And if you're gliding through the neutral zone, that's going to stick out. Uh-huh. Where?
Well, I give Nick Nurse credit.
Yes.
Because he deserves all the credit. He doesn't have guys gliding.
Well,
he's got guys working.
Like, again, we've talked about this. We've compared and contrasted more so when Babcock was here. Hmm. And Babcock was under the spotlight and people were hating on Babcock and it was going south on him and you could feel it. And he would say things like, I don't pay attention to that stuff. And none of us believed him. Nick Nurse was asked about the ESPN power rankings, where last week they did not have the Raptors in the top 10. And this week they were nice enough to show some appreciation.
Let me guess, 10.
7th. So the Raptors are 7th in terms of ESPN's power rankings. And someone asked Nurse about it, and he gave it the old, I didn't even know about that. I never pay attention to that stuff. And because he's 15-4 with a ring, you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he probably doesn't.
There's no way that's true, though.
Of course
there's
not.
There's no way he doesn't know about
that
stuff.
They don't think ESPN is on 24-7 when they go down to the States.
Of
or even
course.
The dressing room now. What am I talking about? The States. I'm sure it's on the dressing room here.
Absolutely.
You get a text from your assistant coach immediately saying, did you see this garbage?
Of course. Like, of course. Every team has a media wing, effectively, where they are searching everything out. Like, I mean everything. I had a conversation with someone in media relations recently, and I was taken aback. Like, I would expect in this city, you know, the two major networks, the two radio stations, the four papers, that's going to be tracked. But I was asking them, what about blogs and tweets? They're like, everything. Like, some guy writes a blog and gets 5 views. 3 of them were from the team he's writing about.
They search keywords. They know all of it.
They are all
tracking
over
all of it.
And guess where it's getting filtered to? The GM, whoever wants it.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah.
Eventually, if you want it, you
just
can
like
get
when
it.
When we platted, do you remember the days where there was the media clips?
The clippings, yeah.
All in the locker room.
Now, I don't see why the players, like, I don't think that's
kidding.
Good
PR. If somebody's garbage and, like, it's your home clippings and the people are getting ripped, it's just like...
Why would you allow them to see it? Why go out of your way to hope that they avoid it?
Dude, for me, I got to be honest with you, it was toilet material. That's it. Like, what are you going to do? There's no newspaper. You take the clippings in,
and
there you go. But when a guy on your team is struggling, and then you can tell the first 3 articles are about him, it's like, oh, God.
I remember one of the first days in Montreal, they're like, whatever you do, don't watch the show after the game. I'm like, okay, it's in French. Well, I can kind of speak it. I'm not going to go home and tune into a post-game French-speaking show. But that was a real concern. That was like a point of emphasis. All new guys, don't watch this show.
Right.
Don't read this whatever paper. I'm like, I'm not going to go buy a French paper. You know, I don't. But
what I realized is every guy that said don't watch this show probably had a TVR and watched it, went home and watched it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And listen, there are some good times.
Well, when you're playing well,
when you're playing well,
you score 3 goals, you're like, turn on the show.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Let's get the highlights on.
Pump my tires. Let's get it going.
Let's see what the boys are saying about me today.
I would imagine in the days of social media, like, has a big game, gets 3 goals. Like, you go on Twitter and it is just showering you accolades and love. Be like, it'd be great. Like, I feel so appreciated.
The problem,
and then it goes the other way.
The problem with the Twitter search is, you can search, and you might get the most recent ones, and then you come across one from 4 days ago.
Yeah, pre-hat-trick.
Pre-hat-trick, and they're like, this guy's a slob and can't do anything. And then you're in a little bit of trouble,
I would be inclined to encourage my players, like, steer clear of, not social media, but just mentions and like that kind of stuff. Like,
you can ask them to, but and ultimately they're going to make that
decision.
I would
ask them to. Advise them to.
Well, at the World Juniors, apparently, I think I was in Buffalo.
Yeah, they take their phones away or something.
Phones away, but they'll have a second phone. There's no way these kids can go 3 weeks without that nonsense. No way.
17, 18, 19-year-old kids.
No.
They probably all have girlfriends back home. You think they're just going to say, I'll see you in 3 weeks?
No way. And you know exactly what I'm talking about.
There's FaceTime happening on the road, and there's no way they're
going to It's hard on those kids, though. I mean, the last few years, we've seen some kids in the World Juniors kind of like have to, felt like that to apologize for their performance or for letting the cut. Like, you know, like,
it's an annual. It's an annual conversation. How hard should you be on these players?
Did you hear the last line in Tom Rennie's little press conference today?
No.
Some of the fact that while they are part of the program of excellence, they're not perfect. Let's remember that as we go to the World Juniors. Like, as a bit of a precursor, like, you know, they're still kids. They still make mistakes. That's
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's an interesting conversation because they're all going to be professional athletes. And they are all almost professional athletes now.
Right. And it's Canada, and the expectations are gold or bust.
Yeah.
Every single
time. What was it, Mikey DiPietro who felt like he had to apologize for...
Well, that was in Vancouver, and that was disappointing. That was in the quarters, against a team that,
I know.
But, listen, it's not all on him.
It might have been semis.
No, you were there. It was in...
semis against
Finland. That's when you lost your medal.
Right, okay.
Yeah, semis against Finland.
Where's the tournament this year? It's in Europe.
Yeah, Czech.
Czech Republic, very nice.
Just had a few meetings about that today.
Feeling good about this tournament?
Feeling good. Yeah. Get everything sorted out.
Location sorted out.
Yeah, well, we're not going, obviously. When it's in Europe, we always do it from Scarborough. So I'm very excited about the World Juniors this year. It's the first year I've done it where I haven't traveled.
Have we stopped pretending that you
travel everywhere?
There was
Toronto, Montreal, maybe 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, back to back.
And then Buffalo, and then Vancouver, and this is the first year where I'm not going anywhere.
That was a good run. Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Buff.
Yeah.
That's solid.
Any early games, though? You might have to be up, but...
I think it was 9 o'clock.
That's not bad.
No.
That's very doable.
Yeah, because they make the Canadian games in the afternoon there,
right.
So that they're prime time here. So 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock starts here.
Yeah.
They'd get the 3 o'clock start there.
Well,
this wasn't been informed by James Duthie. It was the quarterfinal loss.
It was. Yeah, I remember it being very disappointing. Very disappointing.
So was Mikey DiPietro.
Well, and that was tough on him because he's a Vancouver draft pick, right?
He got called up.
Yeah. So, anyway, the NBA, they keep talking about this, in-season tournament and this new schedule that they're going to try to implement. And there's a new report out there today about what they're going to try to put on the line so that teams and, more importantly, players actually take this tournament seriously.
In-season tournament unrelated to the regular standings?
Yeah.
Hang on. Before you tell this...
Well, I'm going to come back and tell it anyway, but...
I mean, how many teams of the total league are going to be involved?
Well, every team is going to be involved. I mean, they're
so
in the early
stupid.
Stages.
Nobody wants to deal with that.
So they're doing an FA Cup in the middle of the Premiership regular season kind of thing.
Exactly.
Something like that.
They don't care about it. They want the Larry OB. That's it.
What if there's a Larry 100 schmil on the line?
Well, that doesn't sound like what they're putting on the line.
I might get their interest.
But they're putting something else on the line that I don't believe the players are going to care about at all. Like, it is not going to gin up any interest.
What is it?
I'll tell you about that next. All right, Ray Ferraro and Marcellus Wiley in the next hour. The Leafs are in Philly tomorrow night. Mitch Marner set to return. It won't be tomorrow night. Could be Wednesday. More than likely on the weekend when they're at St. Louis. The Raptors with a big week as well. Miami tomorrow night at home. At Houston on Thursday. Or no, at home to Houston on Thursday. At Philly on Sunday. So they've met every test they've come across, but this is a big week for them.
With the Jazz, you think that'll be the start of a really tough run without Lowry. So much for that.
And Kyle should be back maybe tomorrow night. You know, he's a game-time decision for tomorrow night. And when he's back, they're pretty much ready to go.
Different kind of challenge to integrate all these guys who now are used to playing 18 minutes, 24 minutes, bigger role, 12 shots, and now Lowry back and try to get everyone there. Their time.
Absolutely.
Good problem to have.
Any part of this play right now has made them second guess that extension for him?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. Because they still need him, right? Like, there's still going to be a time where Lowry's going to factor in significantly. He's still a high-end
talent.
Maybe
not second guess might not have been the right, but just thinking, man, maybe we could have delayed that a little bit, made him think a little bit.
I think what they have to legitimately be thinking is Fred VanVleet a better player right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
is he just
a better player? Yeah. So when Kyle comes back, how are you going to transition between now and the beginning of the playoffs where it's Fred's ball and it's Van Fleet that's going to kind of direct things. That's difficult to do when you've got the alpha that's been here for a long time, and that he's not
signing rings.
He's not too interested in stepping aside for too many people.
And it's not like he's struggled last year. He was good last year.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And he was good before he got injured.
And he's good before he got injured.
Yeah.
So
Lowry will be fine. I mean, the more high-end talent you can get, the better.
Yeah, and we know in the playoffs, when they ratchet down the systems, the bench shrink, and it gets a little tighter, tougher to score.
Right.
You know, remember the team a couple years ago with Dwayne Casey, the bench mob, whatever they're called. Like, they ran guys out because there's 82 games, they have 10 players. When you play 7 or 8, it just becomes the most talented guys matter more. And I think Lowry probably matters more in the playoffs than he does during the regular season.
Big time. Yeah, the 9th and 10th guy, irrelevant come playoff time. So we've heard a lot about these stories that the NBA is looking to implement some new rules to their schedule in a couple of years, including an in-season tournament, kind of like the FA Cup.
And the big prize for winning it is?
Reportedly, according to Mark Stein, a draft pick.
Come on.
An extra draft pick.
I thought you were going to honestly say a $50 million team prize that they all share.
No.
Because then they would get their attention. Just like the NHL All-Star Game, if you do $1 million cash for the MVP of that game, guys might try.
Nobody would pass.
Who cares?
You're right. That'd be great, though.
If you go back to the 5-on-5 tournament or the 5-on-5 game, like $1 million to the MVP instead of a pickup truck they're going to give away, they'll try.
Mm-hmm.
You think about
it. But the second round pick, they don't care.
No, they don't care.
Think about it.
Athletes don't care about what's coming up the pipe.
Of course.
Especially in basketball, draft pick's just going to be a player that replaces me.
The guy's trying to win. There's two rounds, like, 15 roster spots. No, it's the. Okay,
no
credit
chance.
For creativity, but dumb and stupid,
ridiculous.
And no one's going to care.
And don't ever do it.
And don't do it.
$50 million to start.
I got some ideas.
I just gave you the only one you need.
Okay.
$50 million to start.
Yeah, you could be right about that. It's probably not realistic, but it could be if you get it sponsored. Ray Ferraro coming up, Marcellus Wiley coming up. Big Monday Nighter as well. I think I'm on the clock.
You are.
Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.